I speak to you this morning in the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and life-giving Spirit. Amen.
Amen.
Last Sunday, we talked about Jesus' mighty deeds of power. And you'll remember that in a remarkable two-part story, he healed a woman who had suffered for 12 years from some kind of mysterious bleeding. And then he raised the dead 12-year-old daughter of the ruler of the synagogue, Jairus. Then, exhausted from those amazing feats, and probably also from the press of the crowds, he goes home to Nazareth, to the place where he grew up. And there, in that place, where he belongs, he stands up and teaches in the synagogue on the Sabbath day. And all the people, all those folks who have known him from forever, really, they're awed, both by his teaching and by the rumors of the stories of his marvelous feats of healing. And so for a moment, it looks like a warm, fuzzy scene of homeboy makes good. But it quickly turns. All too quickly, it becomes a disappointing, painful scene of rejection. A rejection that starts to dog Jesus all the way to Good Friday and the cross. St. Mark doesn't tell us what it was that Jesus said or did that caused the offense that day. And St. Mark doesn't tell us how Jesus and his friends got out of town, except that as they went, he did lay hands on a few people and he cured them. But we can imagine, can't we, the townsfolk standing and watching them leave and muttering things like, well, we knew all along he wouldn't amount to much, or that he would be too big for his britches, or worse, what can you expect from a boy who doesn't know who his real father was? But the story does tell us that Jesus could do no deeds of power in that place, and that he was amazed at their unbelief. Unlike the story we read last week, when he performed two mighty deeds of power, separated by just a few minutes, in Nazareth, he's suddenly paralyzed. It's an incredible and peculiar contrast. So peculiar that one has to ask, what happened between then and now? Why was Jesus powerless in the very place that had formed him and given him life, the place of his roots? Well, these are intriguing and important questions for us, because if we're honest, I think we believe that miracles simply flow from power. We assume that miracles are acts performed by a mighty person with supernatural, God-given powers. And as Christians, we do believe that Jesus was God in human form, and so must have been all-powerful, just as the Father is all-powerful. And that's how he performed his mighty acts of healing. So what happened to that power on this Sabbath day in Nazareth? Well, these questions take us back to the nature of miracles themselves, and from there, a little bit further back, to the nature of God, God's self. Had we not had a guest preacher on Trinity Sunday, and had I drawn that short straw, which actually I would have enjoyed, I would have reminded you that the Trinity is a wonderful Christian metaphor for the truths that God, the God we worship, is personal and relational. I would have reminded you that God is a trinity of three persons, equal yet different, and always lovingly and tenderly kind of inclined towards one another, just like in the Rublev icon. And I would have said that the essence of this personal, relational God is love. A love that overflowed its bounds and so created this universe in which we dwell. And a love that keeps overflowing its bounds in relationship with us human beings. And finally, I would have said, so you're getting the sermon anyway, that this overflowing love then sent Jesus into the world to be our Redeemer, to heal the blind and the crippled, the lame, the leper, and the demon-possessed. So, back to our original dilemma. Why couldn't Jesus use that godly power that Sabbath day in Nazareth? What robbed him of his power? Well, these questions actually remind me of a wrenching therapy session I had with a client just a few weeks ago. This young man has endured more than his fair share of trauma and tragedy, although don't ask me what a fair share is. But happily, he was just getting his life back on track. He was in a good, what he thought was healthy relationship with a beautiful young woman, and they had become engaged. And then she telephoned to tell him it was all over, that she was calling off the wedding because although she loves him, she doesn't love him anymore in that way. And this young man broke down in my office, sobbing and heartbroken. He despaired he would ever get over her. And then, finally straightening up, looking me straight in the eye, he said, "Oh, you're a priest, as well as a therapist. Come on, make her come back to me. You have the power. Pray. Call her parents," he said. "Write her a letter. Do something. Do anything. But make her come back to me. Make her love me again. Make a miracle. That's your job, isn't it?" It was a more anguished version of what I often get at garden parties and sporting events. As the sky darkens and the first few rumbles of thunder happen, and people come to me and say, "You gotta pray, we can't have it rain." And then it rains, and they look at me with disgust and say, "What good are you anyway?" Well, sadly, it's not in my job description, just like it wasn't in Jesus' job description, to force someone to do something against his or her will. Neither my power, nor Jesus' power, nor God's power is that kind of power. The power that created this universe, that sent the second person of the Trinity to live and die as one of us, this power is the power of love, not the power of the hammer. It's the power that calls forth relationships, not the power that forces relationships. It's a power that flows from love, but it's always a love, the only kind of love, that's mutual, two-way, three-way, many ways. So do you see now what took away Jesus' power that day in Nazareth? He could do no mighty deeds of power among those people because those people in his hometown would not accept him. Nor did they believe in him. These folk already had him labeled and categorized as the carpenter's son, or the son of that loose woman, Mary. Remember how that happened? Or the guy who used to live down the street, the brother of James and Joses and Judas and Simon, the guy who really is just like us. They didn't want to know him, and they didn't want to open their hearts or minds to getting to know him. They weren't willing to give their hearts to him. And Jesus was not a circus performer. He was not a magician. He didn't work his mighty deeds of power to entertain or to be noticed or to show off. In fact, as St. Mark tells us this wonderful story, he reminds us over and over and over again that Jesus took great pains to avoid being noticed. And as we saw last week, he performed these mighty acts of power to enact and proclaim the reign of God that was coming, a reign of healing and peace and justice. A reign that only those who believed in him and what it meant could really participate in and understand. The miracles of healing Jesus offered were the fruit of a living, loving bond of friendship that they were being invited to have with him. A friendship, though, that the folk of Nazareth decided they didn't want or didn't need. So, what's it to be? If we understand belief in Jesus as giving one's heart and mind and soul and strength to him, just as we would to our dearest human friend, our partner, our child, our parent, is there belief in this place? Can the man from Nazareth do deeds of power here, or will he just shake off the dust from his feet as a testimony against us? I say, let us welcome him into our midst this day and always, and let it be said that here, in this church, on this corner, in this city, he was able to do mighty deeds of power.